Blog Talk Radio.
Brothers and sisters, greetings everyone. Welcome to Financial Intelligence. This is your host, Stephen Hutchinson. Welcome to Financial Intelligence, where we have that all-important discussion. Yes, we have that conversation. What is that conversation? Yes, you know, the money conversation. Yes, we have that all-encompassing, all attractive conversation, the money conversation, where we discuss this subject from many different aspects, where we are familiarizing ourselves with the concept of money, with the ramifications of money, with the definition of money, with the utility of money, especially for so many of us who have never really had money and have never really accumulated any wealth, and who did not inherit any money or any wealth from their families, right? And therefore, for the most part, we are quite uneducated about the utility of money, how to use money, our benefit, to the benefit of myself, my family, my people. Primarily, how do we do that? Those are some of the questions that we ponder on financial intelligence. And we approach the subject matter from the specific position of financial intelligence because we want to see the big picture. Okay, so we're not just microscoping how to make more money. We're not just microscoping how to invest. We're not just microscoping how to save or microscoping how to budget or microscoping the economic principles or microscoping finance principles. So what we're doing is taking a broad view. And we discuss different subjects in each show. in this particular show, I want to focus on taxation, the big picture of taxation. Because once you start to discuss finance, money, you must immediately include in your calculation taxation. Okay? Specifically and especially and definitely not exclusively in America, because most people who listen to me are American and I'm from America, so I focus my concentration and my studies on the American system. And as a tax preparer, as a registered tax preparer registered with the Internal Revenue Service, as a preparer of taxes, I focus on understanding the tax system in America, how it affects individuals, how it affects small businesses, and how it affects corporations. I mainly focus on individuals and small businesses, and particularly in my tax business. That's what I focus on. My company is called Power Tax. You can go to my website, and there are resources there that you can take advantage of. That my website is Power Tax, that's with two X's, powertax.com. That is powertax.com. There are resources there. There's information there that could definitely answer many questions for you, that can provide you with some guidance. There's also a calculator on the first page. If you want to calculate and get an estimation of what your tax responsibility or your tax refund will be, you can go there. You can go to my website, powertax.com, and on the very first page, there's a calculator. You can put in your figures and begin to calculate. Also, on my website, you will also find there is a portal in which you can utilize to send me your tax document so that we at Power Tax can do your tax return for you. Of course, for a fee, we're a business. Just as you go to any other tax preparer or accountant or CPA or tax company to have your taxes done, we provide that service. At Power Tax, we will do your income tax return. Now, one of the unique factors of our company at Power Tax is that we not only do your taxes, but we answer your questions. We reveal to you and explain to you exactly what is going on in your tax return, so that you understand that and so that you increase your financial intelligence, because that is a definite part of your financial intelligence, and that's important to you. It's your personal tax return. Whether you're doing an individual tax return or you're doing a tax return as married filing joint, then it would be a husband and a wife and husband filing a tax return together, putting their incomes together, putting their deductions together, putting their credits together to get the best benefit, they would file married filing joint. Now, they do have another option. A married person has an option of filing married filing separate. That can also be done. Now, when a married person files married filing separate, they automatically lose a lot of access to credits, tax credits. Tax credits are good things for you, for the taxpayer, just as a tax deduction is a good thing for you, the taxpayer, okay, or you, the business. Whether you are an individual or a business, you have the option of filing in more than one way, depending on your personal circumstances. So if a married person or if two married people decide they want to file married filing separate, as I said, they will lose access to certain tax credits. But also, sometimes the overall picture, it would be better for a married couple to file married filing separate, okay? And then there are some other options, too, for married couples to file. They may also file injured spouse. Injured spouse is another type of filing whereby one spouse, because of their previous activities, financial activities, have incurred some type of, let's say, some type of tax debt, or they are in a position where their tax return or their tax refund is going to be eliminated or is going to be taken either by the federal government or a state government or by the IRS or some other body, then the other spouse may want to protect themselves from that. And in that case, there's another type of filing called injured spouse. And then the spouse who has a good, financial situation can protect their financial position from the damage of the other spouse. You see, so that is called an injured spouse. Killer. Let's see here, injured spouse. Also, there's another filing called the innocent spouse, right? Injured spouse, innocent spouse, these are tax terminologies, right, so that one can understand and get appreciation and use these things. See, I'm going to read something to you here from the Internal Revenue Service, and they say, you may be an injured spouse if you file a joint tax return and all or part of your portion of a refund was or is expected to be applied to your spouse's legally enforceable past due financial obligation. Okay? Summarize that. In other words, you are the injured spouse if filing a joint return with your spouse, all or part of your portion of a refund is going to be applied to your spouse's debt, okay, financial obligation. And then it says, here are seven facts about claiming injured spouse relief, okay? So number one, to be considered an injured spouse, you must have paid federal income tax or claimed a refundable tax credit, such as the earned income credit or additional child tax credit on the joint return, and not be legally obligated to pay the past due debt, okay? So as I mentioned, when I was talking about married filing separate, you lose certain tax credits, like the earned income credit. If a person files married filing separate, you're no longer eligible to gain the benefit of the earned income credit. So here, in relation to this injured spouse, considered an injured spouse, you must have paid your federal income tax or you are receiving a refundable tax credit such as the earned income credit or additional child tax credit on your joint return and not be obligated to pay the past due debt. If you're not obligated to pay your spouse's debt, then you can protect yourself from that. Okay? Then there are some special rules which apply in community property taxes. Okay? So if you're in a community property state, that's a different subject, of which Pennsylvania is not. Now, if you file a joint return and you're not responsible for the debt, but you are entitled to a portion of the refund, you may request your portion of the refund by filing injured spouse allocation, which is a form that you would file, okay? So you could file that to protect your money from the debt of your spouse. So that's just, some general information there about how you can file your tax return even though you are married. Your refund, protect your tax credits, protect your money from any damage or debt that may be accumulated by your spouse. So, therefore, as I was indicating, you can file in different ways. You can file single, the first one I mentioned, you can file single, and you can file married filing joint or married filing separate. Similarly, a person who's filing single, which means that you have no spouse, you don't have a legal spouse, and therefore you would file single. File single, but you have dependents. You say you have children who live with you and who you take care of, then actually that would change your filing status. You wouldn't be single. You would then be head of household. Or it could be that you're taking care of your parents. That will qualify you for head of household. So the head of household is another filing status. There are five filing statuses. Head of household is one. And the head of household filing status is superior to filing single. So given the choice between filing single and filing head of household, you want to file head of household. So that's four categories, right? Filing single, filing married, filing joint, filing married, filing separate, and filing head of household. And then the fifth filing status is qualifying widow or widower with a qualifying child. Okay, so that status is qualifying widower or widow with qualifying child. That is the fifth filing status. So there are five filing statuses that you can choose according to your qualification. So sometimes you can make that choice yourself. You actually have some room or some flexibility to make the choice as to which filing status you want to choose, but many times you really don't have a choice. You are in a default situation. That is your filing status. So, for instance, if a person's filing status is single and they don't have any dependents who they are providing, shelter, providing food, and providing a percentage of their revenue, their income, then you have to file single. You can't just say, you know what, I want to file head of household because I'm the head of this household. It's like, no, it doesn't work like that. Head of household, for tax purposes, has nothing to do with you being the boss, who paid the cost, right? That's irrelevant. These are tax terminology, legal terminology. Taxes are all about law. That's what it's about. Taxation is law. There are laws and codes. These codes are the laws, legislation. This is legislated, right? The Congress does the legislation, right? So I believe that's how it goes, right? And creates the tax law, okay? And then once the law is laid down, then the citizens scrambling to execute the law. Because if you break the law, then you can be punished, right? So taxation is based upon law, is based upon punishment, is based upon fear, right? The tax man, the IRS, right? How many people view the IRS as a friend? How many people want to receive a letter from the IRS? How many people send Christmas cards to the IRS, Okay, so there's a certain amount of fear that's there in relation to taxation. Taxation, also, there's a great deal of misunderstanding or ignorance in relation to taxation. And the result of that ignorance in relation to taxation is that people just don't even want to hear about taxation. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to discuss it. They don't want to read about it. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to, you know, be exposed to it. You know, people just will say, you know, just go ahead, just let me just pay the tax and move on and move on. My position is actually taxation is a part of our financial literacy, part of our financial education, part of our financial intelligence, that taxation is not just some, you know, foreign beast that we simply have to surrender to, you know, like some monster who visits, you know, our village and threatens to eat our children if we don't, you know, make a sacrifice to them, and we just make the sacrifice and just live in fear until the monster comes back. No, I don't view it that way. I don't think that's the best way to view it. Even though there is, you know, a great deal of forced servitude in relation to taxation. But if you associate yourself with others who can give you some genuine information in relation to taxation, then maybe your resistance, your doubts, your misunderstanding can be eliminated, can be decreased, can be converted into an arsenal which you can use to elevate yourself. So understanding taxation can help you to relieve your anxiety in relation to that, the stress and the anxiety that is produced in relation to taxation, right, can be eliminated, and it can be decreased, minimally can be decreased. And the more we decrease our stress and anxiety, the more equipped we are to understand, to learn. So that's why I am of the opinion that it is best for each of us, since we are all forced to pay taxes, right? Because it is not voluntary. It's not like any of us are voluntarily saying, let me send some money to the federal government. Let me send some money to the state government. Let me send some money to the local government. Let me send some money to the municipality. Let me just give them some money. I don't know anyone who is in that mood. Perhaps they exist, but I don't know them. So actually, as a tax professional, I get to sit down with people throughout the year, primarily during the tax season, but throughout the year, and discuss their tax situation, their taxable situation. And the overwhelming feeling, the overwhelming emotion is negative in relation to taxation for most people, okay? So that's why I think it behooves us to educate ourselves. And I think it behooves us to have a relationship with a tax professional who can help help us to get past our initial negative response to taxation, so we can understand this situation and we can capitalize on it as we live in a capitalistic society. In a capitalistic society, relies heavily on taxation. The taxation is implemented by the politicians who create the legislation, which is converted into law and code. So there's a tax code. There's a huge tax code in the United States of America. Just massive amount of tax laws in the United States of America, which are created by politicians, legislators who create these, who are funded by corporations. So get it. See the connection? See the relation? And then who do the people work for? Well, actually, the people work for two. The people work for corporations, and the corporations are financing the politicians who are taxing the citizens. So the citizens are working for who? They work for the corporations, and we work for the government. We're working for both. So we could see them as evil masters or good masters, controllers, manipulators, or however we want to see them. But the reality is there. The dynamic is there. Like we go to the corporation. And when we work for the corporation, what is the first thing the corporation does with our income? What do they collect? They collect taxes. The corporation collects taxes through its payroll service, and they are obligated. Why? Because the legislators in the government wrote the law, the tax law that says, as a company, as an employer, you must collect these taxes and give it to the state, give it to the federal government, give it to the Internal Revenue Service, who functions on behalf of the federal government. So you see the relationship? You see the relation? Now, the employer is collecting taxes from the employee. But they don't only collect taxes. The businesses don't only collect taxes from the employees. Remember, also sell products and services, right? So then comes along the state government, like in Pennsylvania, for instance, there's a 6% sales tax. So now those companies, when they sell the product to said employee, or it may be employed by someone else, then they collect more taxes. They collect what are known as sales taxes. So you see the relationship, the correlation between the corporations, the politicians, the law, and taxation, feeding each other, and who's on the menu? That is the question. So if we are uneducated, if we are merely frustrated, angry, in denial about the situation, then we stay on the menu. Okay, we stay on the menu, you know. And if we want to get off the menu, it's equal to getting off the plantation, right? It's like get off the plantation, get off the menu, you know, have to seek some type of liberation. And that liberation is primarily based upon our intelligence, to understand the circumstances and the situation that we are in so we can do the right things, we can think the right way, which produces the right behavior, which will liberate us from being on the menu or being on the plantation. So taxation is, you know, it rhymes with plantation. That's all I can say. Taxation rhymes with plantation. And this is part of my motivation, taxation, so that I can, one, understand it for myself as an individual, and therefore understand my relation to the situation, to the taxation, to the plantation, so I can understand that, so I can begin to maneuver and understand the system. Because remember, as we just explained about the relation and the correlation between the corporations and the politicians and the law and the legislation and the taxation, once we see those things and see the big picture, then we are able to maneuver. Okay, we are able to liberate ourselves. We're able to liberate ourselves in this situation. And that's the goal here. So my company, PowerTax, as I was explaining, that's what we do in addition to simply doing your tax return. Because you can go anywhere and get your taxes done. You can go to a CPA, you can go to an accountant, you can go to any tax preparation company, you can go to your cousin, or you can do it yourself, do your own taxes, right? So you have options. So understanding that all those options that are there are available, my challenge was, what are we going to offer is unique, that is different. Why would anyone want to file their taxes through PowerTax? You have so many choices. You have large corporations who are able to produce millions of dollars in revenue for marketing purposes, advertising purposes. And they're all in your face, okay, with their brands, and they're branded, and they have so many manipulations and so many methodologies by which to attract the client to their company, because they're established, they're popular, they're famous, they're wealthy, they have many different branches all over the country. So how do we enter into a market like that? So one of my first considerations is that we have to be able to offer something. We have to be able to do that. And, you know, so that is one of the things that we have done. And one of the things that we offer is that we don't just do your tax return, but we answer your question in relation to your tax return. So now here, my point is that we use your tax return, we use your tax return as a method to educate you about your taxes. And it matters to you. It matters because it's your money. So you have an emotional attachment to it, you see? So therefore, we use that emotional connection that we have there in order to convey a message of financial literacy. Now, I have a caller, and I think they have a question or comment. Caller on your exchange is 408. Do you have a comment or a question? Your mic is open. Exchange 408. Your area code is 408. I thought you were vying for an opportunity to make a comment. Is that not the case? Okay, cool. So what I'd like to do right now is I'll take a quick break just for about 60 seconds or so, and let you hear one of our audio clips, I will be right back to continue our discussion. Station.
Greetings, my people. Power up. This is Stephen Hutchinson of Financial Intelligence. I have a company called Power Tax, and in Power Tax, we do your taxes expertly and accurately, but we also answer your questions to help you understand what's going on within your tax return. And the result of that is that your financial intelligence shall multiply. Your financial literacy will increase. So reach out. We do tax returns for all 50 states. Consequently, you do not have to come to my office, but you can reach out to us at PowerTax.com. That's PowerTax with two X's, PowerTax.com. Or you can reach us at 610-955-6508. That's 610-955-6508. I implore to you, don't go to strangers. Reach out to PowerTax. And remember, be powerful.
And we're back. Hi, this is Stephen Hutchinson, your host of Financial Intelligence, where we have that all-important conversation, where we discuss that conversation. Yes, that one. That one right there, the money conversation, right? The money conversation. And we explore it from many different angles, because one of the things I realize, and I realize that is true for me, and that is true for so many of my peers, that, you know, I was born into a family that did not accumulate any significant assets at all. So what's an asset? An asset is something, generally speaking, an asset is something which has monetary value that you own. That's the general definition. Of course, one of my distant mentors, Dr. Robert Kiyosaki, defines an asset as something which puts money in your pocket. So that's a more refined definition. But really, a book definition of it is an asset is something that you own that has some monetary value to it. So that could be a car, that could be a house, that could be jewelry, that could be a book collection, that could be intellectual property, that could be copyrights, that could be publishing rights, that could be stocks, bonds, cryptocurrency. So anything that has monetary value that you own in a general sense is considered to be an asset, okay? But now, if you take a closer look at that, that asset actually may be functioning as a liability, technically, okay? So aside from that, my point was that my parents, mother and father, did not leave me any type of monetary inheritance, okay? So from a practical perspective, I'm pretty much clueless as to what it would mean to manage any assets, asset management, because I never really had any assets to manage, at least not from a financially literate perspective. So that was one of my motivations to become financially literate, to become financially intelligent, to actually enter into the tax business, because I wanted to understand, what is this finance? What is going on? What is going on with money? How is this thing that everyone wants so bad? What is it? Who's in control of it? What's my relationship with it? And if I want it, how can I acquire it? And I realized that there were many, many people who were in the exact same situation as me, people that I grew up with, also did not inherit any, did not inherit any financial intelligence or any financial literacy. And it's like practically an entire generation of us in my generation. And myself, I'll be 60 years on planet Earth next year. So, and I represent a large percentage of the population who did not inherit any type of wealth from the previous generation. Now, that being a fact that so many of us did not inherit any wealth from the previous generation or inherit any type of financial literacy from the previous generation, the fact is that most of us are in a situation where we are assetless. We don't have the assets. We didn't accumulate assets because we never knew we were supposed to. And we also did not accumulate any financial intelligence or financial literacy. Therefore, that was another motivating factor for me to enter into the tax business to start my company called Power Tax. And as I mentioned earlier, we are here to provide you with products and services that are going to help you increase your financial intelligence so you can solve this puzzle. You can solve this puzzle of money. What is money? And how do we use it? And what is the purpose of it? And how can I create a situation where the next generation is going to be in a much more beneficial and powerful situation than I am presently and than I was previously? Now, it seems that I have some esteemed with me. I see your exchange, 267. Would you chime in, please? I just opened up your mic. That would be 267. Do you have a comment or a question?
I do. I have a question regarding just starting out. Recently newly hired, and how can I make it beneficial as far as for myself for years to come to make sure that the right amount of taxes, that I'm not paying too much, not paying too less. Sorry, I got on late, but just a question that I've been thinking about.
Yeah, well, welcome, 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 welcome. I know that voice. Yes. Ms. Williams, question. Now, in relation to that question, from an employee's perspective, which I was talking about earlier, I was talking about this dynamic of the relationship between the corporation, the politicians, legislation, law, and taxation. And I'm talking about that cycle, and then us, the masses of the people who are usually in the position of the employee in our relationship. So just in general, what I was explaining was we, the employee, the worker, works for the corporation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then what is the first thing the corporation does when they pay you? The first thing they do is they take out withholdings. Taxes. That's what the company does, the corporation does. And then what does the corporation do with those withholdings? They give it to the politicians, right? And now the politicians are the ones who created the law or the legislation that told the corporations that you have to do this for us. We want to tax the population. We want to tax the people. Now, how are we going to get that money? So the government doesn't come to your house. They don't knock on your door. They don't ask you to send it in the mail. They use their relation with the corporation to get that money. So, and mind you, just another piece of that puzzle before I specifically answer the question. The corporations in a separate room are funding the campaigns of the politicians, right? So the politician is going to the corporations more than once for some contributions, some donations, some funding. So they have a relationship. So understand that relationship between the politician, the corporation, and then the politician creates the legislation, which is then converted into law, the tax code, and then there's enforcement of the tax code, right? It has to be enforced. So who's enforcing it? Well, one group that's enforcing it are the companies, corporations, the employers. So the employer takes out withholding, payroll taxes from the employees. So now your question in specific was about how does the employee make sure that they are not overpaying in taxes,
right,
or underpaying in taxes? Is that your question?
Yes.
Okay. So when the employee goes through the interviewing process and they are hired and they fill out all the documents, there is a form that they fill out called the W-4. Now, that W-4 is known as the withholdings and allowances. Withholdings and allowances. That W-4 is then filled out by the employee, and that form informs the employer how much money to withhold from the employee's pay. It's called a W-4. Okay? Now, if that W-4 is filled out accurately, correctly, then the employer will take out the accurate, correct amount of money, employee's check. Okay?
That's the part that can be confusing at times, you know, when you actually follow the algorithm or formula of how they decide sometimes. And it's kind of like, well, wait a minute, I feel like I'm paying. I think the worker pays so much more than the employer. And sometimes it's kind of like the fair. Where's the fairness in that? And like you're saying, you know, because the employer and the politicians have relationships, backdoor relationships, so to speak, you
absolutely
know, they're benefiting from it more so.
Yeah, it is definitely, it's orchestrated. It's orchestrated. And that word that you just used, the F word, you just used the F word, fair, I'm sorry, there is no room for that in this equation. It's not about fair. That's why the tax codes are laws. Law has nothing to do with fairness, right? Law is law. You know, even there's a statement that ignorance of the law is not even an excuse, right? Or not doesn't even get you a pass. So even if I didn't know the law, like for instance, if I jaywalked, right? If I walked across the street on the red light and an officer decided, hey, you just jaywalked, you're going to get a ticket, I could say, yeah, sir, I did not know it was illegal to cross the street on the red light. The law enforcer would say it doesn't matter whether you know or not. This is not about fairness. So that whole thing about being fair is really not part of the equation. So now that form, though, that form, that W-4, anyone can go online and can pull that form up and take a very close look at the form and analyze it and get a better understanding of it, okay? Because that is the form that informs the employer how much money to withhold from your check, okay? Now, and also, that can be adjusted throughout the year. You can adjust that number. So you can go back to your human resources department and say, you know what? You're taking too much money out of my check. I want to adjust that. And you can sit down with them and adjust it. You can adjust it as many times in a year as you want to. So if you don't know, like you're saying, you even when you look at the form, it's really hard to figure it out exactly. So let's just say you go to your human resources department, you fill it out, then you look at your check, right? You look at the W-2, and you look and see what's the result. And if you see if they're withholding too much or too little, go back to your human resources department. And nowadays, some companies have it set up online where you could just go online, go into the back office and adjust your W-4. You don't even have to go to the human resources department, right? Cool. And you go in there and you adjust it. And then you look at your pay stub. You look at your pay stub because each week when you get your paycheck, they have to give you a pay stub. You know, even if you're getting direct deposits, some people get direct deposits of their pay now, so they're not getting a paper check. But still, there's a paper trail. You go, you look at your pay stub and see if they're withholding the right amount. If they're not, adjust it.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It makes sense. I think it'll help a lot of people out there because, you know, a lot of times it's kind of like, well, that question of why do I have to, or they're paying, I'm paying too, why does it seem like I'm paying so much more than the next person? And just even knowing that you're able to change it intermittently the year because, like you said, you're taking out too much or you're taking out too little. Who wants to owe the government?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. But if they're taking out too little, then that means you are actually getting money the money is coming into your pocket, which was supposed to go to them. So let's just take that scenario just briefly. If that's happening, that actually gives me a chance to access money that technically speaking I shouldn't have access to because my tax. So if I can get access to money and use that money in an intelligent, profitable, beneficial way, then by the time that I have to pay my taxes, it's cool. You know, that could be like, it's kind of like borrowing money to invest in a venture or a business or something that you know that later on you're going to have to pay interest on that money, right? But you know that if I get that money, and I can use that money for my business venture and execute my business plan, I'm going to be doing so good that I will gladly pay that interest, right? But in other words, if you could borrow $1,000, and you know you're going to make $10,000, but you have to pay back 20% interest on $1,000. So that means you have to pay back $1,200. That's a great deal, right? I'm just saying that in that scenario, if that were the case, if a person knows that, you know, they could use that situation. And then the other situation is if they are actually paying too much in taxes, then the government is able to do exactly what I just said against you. So they're taking more of your money than they're supposed to have. They're taking that money. They're investing that money. And they're making money off your money. Okay? And then what they'll do at the end of the year is they'll just return your money to you. but they will not give you any interest on that money, right? That is what we know as a refund in many instances. That's why it's called a refund. You're being refunded, right, from the fund, the money they took from you that they were not supposed to take from you. But because you volunteered it, you put on your W-4, go ahead and take, you know, take 15% out of my check, even though I'm only in a 10% tax bracket. So if I'm in a 10% tax bracket, then I should, you should only take 10%. But if I put on my W-4, yeah, go ahead. You can take 15%, 20%. They'll do it gladly, you know, and just return it at the end of the year.
Well,
and then they say, what were you going to say?
No, I'm just listening. I said, wow.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's the theoretical thing called the perfect tax return. The theoretical perfect tax return means that you actually pay exactly what you owe throughout the year. Then at the end of the year, you break even. The government doesn't owe you. You don't owe them. You break even. Known as the theoretical perfect tax return. Now, looking at the board, I see another caller. Oh, nope. Another caller just vanished into the ether. Okay. Well, I have about 2.5 minutes left pretty much to wrap it up. Are there any other questions or considerations or comments, Kim?
No, that was really it.
Yeah, so
and
that's
I think
you
answered it quite eloquently for me.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, my dear. So, yeah, that's oh, wait a minute. Let's see. I think that caller is back. 302, your area code is 302. I cannot see your actual name. But if you have a comment or question, we got another couple of minutes left on the show. Do you have a comment or question? 302.
Good evening. How you doing?
Excellent, excellent. Is that Mr. Tate?
This is Mr. Tate. You have just came from your heart today and just gave a lot of information. And I'm very impressed with all the knowledge that you have. Now, let me ask you for people who have a business. What do you recommend for a business owner for his taxes? What can he write off? What receipts should he or she be saving?
Okay.
What can you write
business
off?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, for business owners, as I was expressing earlier in the presentation, is explaining that there are, you know, different filing statuses. And as individuals, you know, we file an individual tax return. And then if they're small business owners and they're corporations, large corporations. Large corporations are usually C corporations. C as in the code. It's related to the tax code. So they're called C corporations, like the letter C.
Uh-huh.
And then there are F corporations, the letter S, which are usually smaller, generally speaking. S corporations, you have limited liability companies, also known as LLCs. You have partnerships, you have limited partnerships, and you have sole proprietors. Right? So all of those are different statuses, tax statuses for businesses. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
For businesses. The only one that's actually not a tax status is the LLC, Limited Liability Company. It's not a tax status, nor is it really even recognized by the federal government. That is a state position that you could be in to be protected from liability. It's called limited liability company. So you can create a limited liability company under the state, and that protects you from liability. It separates you, your business owner, from your company. But it really has nothing to do with taxes. It's just a limited liability. Whereas being a sole proprietor or being an S corporation or being a C corporation or partnership has to do with your tax status. So as a business owner, if you're, you know, if you're a sole proprietor, limited liability company, you know, and or any of those statuses, you basically have two things. You have income and you have expenses. So according to the business that you're in, you're going to have some natural type of expenses according to the business that you're in. If you're in a service business, you're going to have certain expenses that is, that all service businesses would have. If you're in a manufacturing business, you're going to have certain expenses that all manufacturing businesses have. And then it depends on the industry that you're in. So let's say you are providing a service. Okay? Let's say you're an insurance broker. All right? Or you're a tax preparer. You're providing a service to people. You could provide a service from your home. And you could have a home-based business. If you have a home-based business, then that means your primary office space is in your home. And then that means you will have a certain number of deductibles and write-offs in relation to your home and their expenses. Okay? Now, if you are not a home-based business, and let's say you have an office, like I have a tax office, so my office is not in my home. So in that relation, I'm going to have those expenses I'm going to be able to write off. My rent for my office, the utilities I pay for my office, the internet I pay for my office, whatever equipment I need in my office, my computer, right, my flat screen, my printer, fax machine, desks, chairs, whatever I need to run my office, paper, ink, all these items, tape, all of these items would be deductions, okay? I'd be able to deduct those on my tax return. And if I'm running a business, a service business, as an individual or as an LLC, then I'm going to be using what's known as a Schedule C that's going to accompany my tax return. If that's a profit loss statement, it's very simple. It's a profit loss statement. And all people who are in business, and even if you're not in business, you should understand the simple principle of a profit loss statement, right? A profit loss formula. All you do is you create a T. You draw a T on a blank piece of paper. And on one side of the T, you put your income. And on the other side of the T, you write expenses. And then where the income is, you put down all your income. On the other side, you list all of your expenses. And you're going to deduct your expenses from your income. If you have more expenses than you have income, you have a loss, right? So you're in the red. If you have more income than you have expenses, then you have a profit. You're in the black. So that's two scenarios. Now if it's a home-based business, you can then, let's say if I'm using 25% of my home for my office, let's say I have a house and I have four rooms in my house. I use one room for my business, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm using 25% of my house for my business exclusively. Then that means I can write off 25% of all household expenses.
Okay.
You with me?
I'm with you.
I'll be able to write off 25% of all household expenses. Again, like I said, if it's not a home-based business, then you can write off 100% of your business expenses to run your office. Then transportation, utilizing your vehicle for your business. can be a huge deduction. But what's required with that is to keep records, because you're asking about like what type of receipts and things to keep. For many of our expenses, like buying business cards, brochures, and things like that, we're going to use a card, debit card, and or credit card. I think debit card is probably better. So we could trace it that way. Ideally, we can also keep receipts, can keep physical receipts for those things. That can be quite cumbersome. But if we keep a separate bank account with our income from our business, and then we're doing all of our expenses from our business bank account, there's going to be a log of that, right, on the bank statement. So we would have a bank statement to prove that I bought a printer, right? If the IRS says, oh, you have on your tax return that you paid, you know, $1,000 for a printer and all that. How do we know that's true? How do we know your printer cost $1,000? You say, well, here's the printer right here. They say, yeah, but how do we know it cost $1,000? Here's my bank statement. Bam. You know, I went to Best Buy and bought the printer. Okay, that's documentation. So as you are questioning, one of the most important things that a business has to understand in the execution of its business to take advantage of tax write-offs is documentation. Documentation is essential. It's essential, particularly and especially in the incidents where one is being audited by the Internal Revenue Service. If the IRS decides to audit PowerTax, then Stephen Hutchinson and PowerTax better document, show them documentation of the expenses. Otherwise, but then here's the other flip side of it. The worst case scenario is that they will deny your deduction and you'll wind up owing a lot of money. But it's not like, you know, we're going to go to jail or anything because we didn't have records. So it's no prison sentence. But they can retroactively deny deductions that I've been filing for years and accumulate all that and say, you know what? Since you cannot prove these deductions, we are denying these deductions for the last, you know, 5 years or whatever, and you owe us, you know, $20,000 or whatever. You follow me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So documentation is absolutely necessary.
Well, thank you. You definitely answered my question.
Absolutely. I'm glad I could do that. Definitely. This is so that's, you know, that's the service that we provide at PowerTax, which was the basic theme of my presentation today, is that at PowerTax, we don't just do your tax return, because there's a plethora of places you can go and get your taxes done. You can go to an accountant, a CPA, you can go to a bookkeeper, you can go to such and such company, ABC company, you can go to Cousin Pookie, you can go do it yourself, you know, software. You can go to the IRS website and do your federal tax return for free. And then you can turn around and go to PA if you're in Pennsylvania, or Delaware if you're in Delaware. You can go to the state of Delaware, to the website, and do your state tax return for free. You can do that. So why would you come to PowerTax? And one of the reasons why is because we don't only do your tax return, but we answer your questions about your tax return, help you understand what's going on in your tax return, so that the result of doing your taxes with PowerTax is that not only you get your taxes done accurately and correctly, but you also increase your financial intelligence. You increase your financial literacy. And therefore, our theme is that We believe that people should have a relationship, a good communication relationship with their tax preparer. So because as they're getting their financial house in order, taxes play a huge role in getting our financial houses in order. And that's pretty much going to wrap it up for the show today. Any other comments or questions, Kim or Mr. Kate?
No, that's good. That's some good stuff. Hopefully everyone that's listening will utilize the information that you shared with us this evening.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah,
so I'd like to thank everyone.
Well.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your participation. And now we're going to sign off. This is Stephen Hutchinson, your host of Financial Intelligence, where we have that all-important conversation. Yep, the money conversation. And I also like to thank my co-sponsors, Tribe Family Channel, Miss Beverly Black, as well as Genius is Common, Mr. Bruce George, and express great support and appreciation for them. And remember, you can tune in again. We do this show basically every other week. And you can check out my website. That is powertax.com. That's powertax with two X's. .com. There's a wealth of information there. There's a calculator on the front page there you can take advantage of. Until next time, be powerful.